when we're talking about health disparities between various groups of people in the United States, what kind of things are we talking about?
I think there are numerous ways to define the inequalities in health as well as the inequalities in health care. And to ferret out some of that language, sometimes it's easier if we sort of developed a working framework for what we're talking about and some of what we're not talking about. So when I was asked to talk about health inequalities, I sort of marinated over that and what would be a more positive or forward-moving way to discuss it, and that would be health equity, because that's kind of the energy that we're moving. However, to undergird that, we do need to understand better what are those things that contribute to this inequality, and that's where health disparities comes into play. So it's the differences in the health status among distinct segments of the population, whether it's based on gender, race, or ethnicity, education, or income, or where you live, worship, and play. Definitely, people of color, for instance, are disproportionately in poor communities, and with that will come limited access to goods and services, whether it's education, whether it's opportunities for employment, whether it's the dependence on public transportation and the like. And so you sort of have more things that contribute to health disparities that involve a social, cultural framework than just health itself.
So are we talking about basically differences in access to health care or differences in the outcome once care is given?
Well, we can talk about before you even get there in the difference in the health status, irrespective as to the differential health care that's received. The differential health care that's received may be contingent upon the type of insurance that you have, or it may be dependent upon the provider and his or her understanding of what your needs are. There may be impediments based on language and the inability of the patient to communicate his or her needs, and or the inability of the provider to understand what the needs are and how to respond in a culturally appropriate manner. However, when we're talking about differences in health, we're talking about where people are disadvantaged based on just, for instance, perhaps the asthma conditions in the community. The factors that contribute to that will have to do with housing. Oftentimes, the pollutants in the air based on public transportation and the like. And so you have a child who is disproportionately exposed to those environmental toxins that impacts on his or her health. And then they are, going to the emergency room, admitted to the hospital, and then exposed to the variations in health care before being discharged and returned to the same environment that could, in fact, compromise any health care that was delivered while they were in the hospital setting.
What are some steps, do you think, that could be taken to make health and health care more equitable in this country?
Well, I think there are the ways in which we go about sort of looking at institutional practices and policies. First, we have to have good data. We have to be able to collect this data to understand what our challenges are. And that begins with the kind of training that you will have for an intake person, what you will do with the data in terms of routinely assessing where there may be differences in the type of intervention, medications prescribed, days in the hospital based on race, based on gender, based on ethnicity. So that data is very, very, very important to help frame what the problems are within a healthcare setting. There's also, what are you going to do when you have these differences in the distribution of the health care, whether it's the assessment or the prescription side of things. And it may have to do with the provider knowledge, comfort level, understanding about this particular patient population that may be different than his or her own racial background, religious beliefs, or ethnic identity or gender identity. And therefore, the training and education that's necessary to improve an awareness of the personal barriers to that knowledge, and then the development of curriculum around the skill set required to overcome those particular challenges. And then again, retaining a commitment to data to help reflect back to the provider population where some of these discrepancies in care are and how they've been reduced based upon different types of effective curriculum training education opportunities. There is issues that relate to access and through the Affordable Care Act and the movement towards ensuring that all citizens have health care can help drive down cost and help improve efficiency when you have patients who are not accessing the emergency room, for instance, at a later stage in a disease or health crisis, but in fact they are connected to and routinely being seen by a primary care doctor. And that relationship begins to help the patient develop a better knowledge, working knowledge of his or her medical condition. It helps the primary care doctor develop better rapport with the patient, its family, community resources that will be more efficacious in how that particular provider will prescribe certain interventions that are affordable and accessible post-discharge. So those are some of the ways that I think the interface with the healthcare system can be enhanced to improve health equity. There's also the community, the role of the community, whether it's churches or schools that and or government, for that matter, that play a role in partnering to ensure that there is greater knowledge base around those social factors that contribute to poor health, whether it's obesity, as I mentioned earlier, asthma, cardiovascular disease, many of the habits, many of the chronic pathways to disease or pathway to chronic disease begins in early childhood, early adulthood. And it's not because of access to health care. It's a matter of how a family or an individual member in that community feels empowered, has access to the resources to ensure that they are practicing better health habits, whether it's food and nutrition, you know, healthy snacks in the schools, whether it's the housing conditions and working with the Department of Transportation, Department of Housing, Department of Public Health, in partnership with community residents to really look at what are some of the toxins in the environment and how do you educate a family around things like use of pesticides in the homes, the issues around violence prevention that will enable the community to, or residents to feel safer in the community to go out and exercise, working with parks and recreation to ensure that the playgrounds are safe, the swings and the playground equipment is up to par, the glass and feces that will often occupy the physical grounds are kept clean. So those are all partnerships, and that's not an interface with the healthcare system, but those are involving many other partners that can collaborate to ensure that residents are living in a healthier community.
You mentioned the Federal Affordable Care Act. Part of that asked states to expand their Medicaid programs, and that's been an ongoing debate here in Michigan and in other states. Do you think that doing that will provide some step towards addressing some of these care issues, at least?
I do, but I am not prepared to give you a whole lot more insight into that. But I think just really looking at the healthcare expenditure on an annual basis per individual and looking at ways that we supplement that care, it's a matter of, as a society, do we pay now or do we pay later?
You're a member of the faculty at the School of Medicine at Johns Hopkins University. What role do schools of medicine have in addressing this issue, do you think, in the way that they prepare the physicians and other workers, healthcare workers of the future?
As I mentioned, a school of medicine as highly decentralized as the Johns Hopkins School of Medicine must be a leader in the connection with the health care system, be involved in rigorous data collection, to be involved in training that helps to elucidate the differential in care, the strategies to align inequities in health care with safety, quality and safety, to help ensure that everyone across that healthcare delivery system, the training programs, curriculum development are keeping these key components in mind so that curriculum that is within the medical student training does have a focus on cultural competency care in the healthcare setting, that our students have the opportunity to be mentored in an environment that is inclusive, that there is a commitment to recruiting underrepresented minority faculty to serve as mentors, that we are developing residents and interns that have the same opportunity to be hired onto our faculty and to have a productive research career as well as a clinical care profile. I'd just like to say that the health of America depends on the health of all Americans, and millions of Americans are suffering from diseases that are avoidable. And that impacts our whole economy, productivity, and the healthcare costs. And improving Americans' health in general will not only improve the economy, but it will improve the quality of life for millions of Americans. And so with that in mind, my hope in being a part of the Kalamazoo community is to really bring attention to issues of poverty and the impact relating to poverty among the residents in Kalamazoo, particularly those who are minority, and that impacts children. It impacts the way in which the educational system is impacted, and it impacts taxpayers. And so the story isn't just national. As you mentioned, it's definitely local. Everything is local. And my hope is to be able to connect some of that big picture thinking to the local residents and stakeholders and institutional partners that will be a part of the lecture series.